We'll call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order this afternoon. It is 10 minutes after 1, March the 29th, 2012. Today I'm joined by Senator Ellis, Senator McGuire, Senator Egan, and Senator Thomas. And my co-chairman is on his way, so we're just trying to expedite things so we can get things going. The first item on our agenda today is Senate Bill 25, ADA, Sustainable Energy Program. The second bill is HB 250, the Renewable Energy Grants, and the final bill for consideration today is People Transportation Funding. The first bill, Senator McGuire is here, regarding the ADA Sustainability Program. This is the first hearing on the bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the legislation, take public testimony, and put the bill aside for further review. With that, Senator McGuire, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Senator Lisa McGuire, the Senator for South Anchorage, District N. And I'm here today with my Chief of Staff.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Michael Pulowski, and I'm aide to Senator McGuire.
And as we know, Fish, as we call him, is more than just an aide to me. He has been quite a resource to the entire Senate in crafting of our energy policy, and I want to say thank you to him. He'll be beside me as we walk through this bill. I want to start, Mr. Chairman, by simply recognizing how far we've come as a body. The fact that we wouldn't even be here today talking about this bill is a testament to the work of the Senate Finance Committee. We were just looking back at numbers, and in fiscal year 08, there was just $2.5 billion in the CBR, and there was no money in the Statutory Budget Reserve Fund. And I think that's really important for us to sit back and recognize that today we're looking at over $15 billion between those two funds. And it is in light of the growth of that fund that I started to think a little bit last year about how we could put some of the money that we have to work and aside as a savings for the future, for future generations. And I know you've done that yourself, Mr. Chairman, with respect to power cost equalization as well. So you understand the concept behind this bill. This bill would be capitalized with $250 million initially and set aside and put to work for Alaskans. I want to start with the disclaimer that the following presentation contains slides and presents estimates of capital spending based on projects that have been identified in reports prepared for or by the Alaska Energy Authority. The presentation should not be considered an endorsement of any of those particular projects, fuel sources, or combinations of projects identified by the authority or its contractors, so that as we walk through them, I'm simply referencing many of these Energy Authority reports so that we can see the size of the liability out there, but not necessarily giving any support toward that. And I say that especially for Senator Egan when it comes to the Southeast Energy Report. So first of all, I want to start with how we'll walk through it today. We're just going to define what it is. This bill is intended to address what we believe to be a shortage in access to capital. The legislative history leading up to it was that in 2008, and you can see photos up there from many of you are in those photos as we traveled throughout the state. This one in particular was in Tanana. This was the Combined Energy and Resources Committee in the Senate. We were responding to high oil prices and the subsequent impact on residents. As you recall, members of the committee recall, oil had reached $147 a barrel. It's interesting to note that today we're at about $110 a barrel, so we're really, Mr. Chairman, not that much lower. I think we felt this was an unprecedented time and went to work, but it's important to recognize that those prices are still very high, and the residents of Alaska, particularly those that are still relegated to diesel as a fuel source, are suffering. We established the Home Weatherization Energy Rebate Program with your leadership, Mr. Chairman. We also established the Renewable Energy Grant Fund, again with your leadership. And we offered direct energy assistance as well. We also established a special committee on energy to respond to that. The bipartisan working group held hearings across Alaska, as I mentioned, to develop and craft energy programs and policy recommendations. We followed up with the creation of an omnibus energy bill, Senate Bill 220, that addressed a wide array of energy issues ranging from efficiency for public facilities and a new fund that that could be used to for loans for energy retrofitting that's just now really getting up and going. We also created an emerging energy technology fund as I made a report on the floor a couple of weeks ago. We have over 70 applicants for the $9 million in that fund, and we hope to see some really innovative projects come out of that. We also reflected on heating assistance to the leasing of state land for renewable energy projects. We've aggressively led on energy issues, and I would say if there's one thing besides savings that our legacy will be here, it certainly is our work on energy issues. Significant challenges remain, however, and Senate Bill 25 intends to be an additional component to that comprehensive strategy that our working group has developed to address the needs of Alaskans. The problem, as we identified out in the villages and the larger communities around the state that we didn't quite know how to address, was that of access to capital. And so we heard from folks who were taking advantage of grants, who wanted more. We created those. We heard from folks that wanted to weatherize their homes, weatherize and retrofit their properties, their schools, their municipal and borough infrastructure. We addressed that. But now we have the remaining area of those who have innovative energy projects out there that don't have access to capital. This is a nationwide problem, Mr. Chairman. In the wake of the recession in 08, lenders are still very, very tight about what they're lending out. And so I want to just give you an overview of a few of the documents that came into our thoughts. The first was the Alaska Energy Pathway Report, the AEA report, Alaska Energy Authority report of July 2010, showing that between now and the next 10 years, capital spending of just shy of $2 billion for energy projects statewide would be needed. And again, I don't want to go forward and say that any one of these I endorse, but you can see divided up by the individual regional native corporations just the size of the need. Next, we had the first of our integrative resource plans come in and on schedule. That was the Rail Belt Integrated Resource Plan, which came in from the Alaska Energy Authority in February of 2010. And again, you can see the magnitude of projected capital spending estimates that were predicted. And that was from between $13.625 billion to $21.109 billion over the next 10 years. And I know, Senator Ellis, you and I have been in briefings. This is a reflection in our community and certainly Senator Thomas and the Rail Belt. These needs are dire. And frankly, I would pose that in certain parts of the Rail Belt, we're approaching an emergency in the area, particularly of transmission and generation. We've got aging facilities, some of them approaching 35 years. And so that's the magnitude there. The Southeast Energy Integrated Resource Plan came out in December, this last December, from the Alaska Energy Authority. And I note that there have been some recommendations that were controversial. Senator Egan, Senator Munoz, Representative Munoz, and others have made comments about that. But irrespective of that, I think you can look at the needs from a 35,000-foot view and recognize that Southeast is in exactly the same shape as the rest of the state with that dire need for capital to come in. The low-end capital cost estimates contained in the refined screen potential hydro project table identify $1.327 billion in potential expenditures. The capital cost estimates in the results of transmission interconnection economic evaluation table identify $1.424 billion in potential expenditures. And the CIERP results of integrated cases estimate capital spending for optimal hydro transmission case at $1.407 billion. And as we know, Mr. Chairman, it is hydro that has made up the backbone of a lot of Southeast energy infrastructure. So in summary, you have the Alaska Energy Pathway Report, of near term, 0 to 10, roughly $2 billion in projected needs. The Rail Belt Integrated Resource Plan in projected needs, anywhere between $13 to $21 billion. And finally, just coming out in 2011, the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan projecting $1.4 billion. So the takeaway is that there's going to be substantial spending on energy infrastructure in Alaska for the next 5 to 10 years, and if there isn't, we're all in trouble. So how do we get there? The co-chairman of this committee worked particularly hard in 2011 on a statement of intent regarding all capital appropriations working forward in the future. And the quote of that statement is that it's the intent of the legislature that the state's capital investment into energy generation projects not exceed 50% of the total investment required to complete those projects, fully complete those projects. I'll just pause on that to say that that's one of the things that we're really trying to get at in this bill. You'll see as we walk through the minutia is we have provisions in there that don't allow for greater than one-third of the total project cost to be lent out by ADA. So we want skin in the game. We want those projects out there to have to pass creditworthiness. And to partner in it, but what we're recognizing is that the need is great and that we have this unique authority in ADA, an infrastructure bank, an investment bank, that has the potential to move us forward. And I also just want to pause for a second to say, Mr. Chairman, that I think that, and we're going to walk through, I'm going to have Fish walk through some of the minutia of the financing, but just to add a little bit more flavor, that if we were to adopt this bill and move it forward, I think 5 years from now, this legislature would be able to look back with pride at some of the exciting opportunities that were created as a result, filling the needs and those gaps in the reports that we talked about, creating new jobs for Alaskans, and growing the access to energy, the supply itself, the transmission and the generation of it. Without that growth, our economy has the potential to stagnate. I think that's my concern. Never mind the overwhelming burden that Alaskans are facing every month as they go to pay their energy costs. If we want to look at economic growth, and as you know, Hugh Short is the new chairman of ADA, and it's our generation, I think, and his background in Alaska growth capital that are coming in, and I think we'll be able to use this tool to make a lot of growth in the economy. So I'm going to turn it over to Mike Pulaski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, Mike Pulaski, aide to Senator McGuire. Just to move quickly through the financing point, what this slide is intended to demonstrate is that the gap that many of our utilities around the state experience is with small rate bases, large capital costs. There is a delta between what the utilities themselves can finance versus what the need for the demand and infrastructure is. And here you see from the Rail Belt Integrated Resource Plan the recognition that within the Rail Belt itself, the projected capital expenditures are well above the existing debt capacity, both in a high case and a low debt case, for the utilities. So SB 25 is intended to step into this interim place between what the utilities can do and what the needs are to help finance energy infrastructure. The other point is to bring out from the Southeast IRP that debt service, principal, and interest payments are a serious part of any project. And what the bill, as we get into the bill, proposes is that retaining those principal and interest payments in state are an opportunity that the state should seriously consider and look at. The point being is that financing is a very important part of any project development. And so the legislature has put a good policy statement on the table that there needs to be skin in the game in the development of energy projects in the state. The energy pathways and other documents have recognized that access to financing is a very difficult challenge facing utilities out there, and that financing is an important part of projects. So Senate Bill 25 is really designed to address that particular issue, specifically the financing piece for energy projects. So because the bill reads a little weird, what I wanted to do was go through the bill in reverse in a section-by-section analysis. So in this, what I will do is reference the slide, but also the bill itself and the legislation. Due to drafting, the material portions of the bill are in the back of the bill in sections 14 and 15, which begin on page 8, line 29. This section, page 8, line 29, through to page 9, line 21, establish a new fund within ADA, the Sustainable Energy Transmission and Supply Fund. That's established as a separate fund within the authority. It describes the powers for that fund in page 9. I'm sorry, it sets up the fund, page 9, lines 5 through 21. Page 9, line 22 through 26, describes how the fund balance can be used, and that is particularly to finance, to assist in the construction, improvement, rehabilitation, and expansion of energy projects. The fund, as it's designed now, is limited specifically to energy projects, which are designed later in the bill. The powers and duties section is in page 9, line 27, through to page 10, line 21. The reason a new fund was created in the bill is to protect the existing credit rating of ADA, but also to offer expanded powers and limitations to ADA when it comes to energy financing. So the powers as they are expanded is page 10, line 1 through 3, talks about the ability to acquire real or personal property by purchase, transfer, or foreclosure when the acquisition is necessary to protect the authority's interest in financing. This is to allow ADA to retain the collateral it needs to finance in these investment projects. A new power that's different than those that ADA currently has is page 10, line 4 through 5, the ability to defer principal payments or capitalize interest on energy projects. As members are well aware, when projects are built, there's often the time between when the project is generating revenue and during the construction stage that this power offers the ability to enhance the economics of a project while still protecting the return to the state. Additional powers that are important that distinguish SETS and the development fund as it's proposed from a traditional revolving loan fund is under page 10, line 14. And this is the ability of ADA under their existing statute 4488090 to issue debt against the proceeds of the fund. So as ADA makes investments, they can borrow in the capital markets to increase the value of the fund. So whatever the fund is capitalized with, whatever number the committee decides upon, that is core capital that then can be grown through the way ADA typically does now. The limitations on financing are an important part on page 10, line 22. This is what Senator McGuire was speaking to earlier. These are a bit more stringent than ADA currently has on some of its financing opportunities, and that's page 10, line 25, a basic threshold that says, if ADA wishes to finance more than one-third of the capital cost of a project, that project has to come back through the legislature to authorize the investment in that project. The point, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, was to offer an additional level of due diligence to the financing to be sure that we are protecting the assets of the state. The loan guarantee language that would require legislative approval in excess of $20 million is taken from the existing ADA programs. The limitations on project financing are a little bit different as well. On page 10, lines 27 through 30, financing terms are limited to the life of a project. However, recognizing that transmission and hydroelectric projects in particular have a different financing life cycle, 50 years is allowed for the financing of those projects and those projects alone. Working now back to the front of the bill, I'd be happy to take questions at any time, Mr. Chairman, too. Back to the front of the bill, Section 1 establishes a short title on page 1. The intent for capitalization is found in Section 2. That's lines 1, page 1, lines 9 through 12. And that's the $250 million number that Senator McGuire had introduced along with the bill. Section 3 is page 1, lines 13, all the way through page 3, line 22. What this is doing is adding the word energy into ADA's existing authorizing statutes, where it's setting out the purpose and the mission of ADA. Section 4 is additional conforming language about the inclusion of the word energy. And these conforming changes were done, Mr. Chairman, to explicitly draw the nexus between ADA's authorizing statutes and the fund itself to say that ADA is being pushed to really rise to the challenge of financing energy projects in particular. Section 6 is an adjustment to ADA's existing loan participation program. That's on page 4, line 16. ADA finances through really two methods right now primarily. One is a direct investment, and the other is working with the private sector. The reason Section 6 was retained to allow ADA to work in conjunction with the commercial financing sector was to not unfairly compete in that, say, a Wells Fargo or another bank in state would like to finance an energy project, then Section 6 would allow ADA to work through their normal loan participation program to participate in that financing. In addition to that, an important change is made on page 4, lines 28 through 30 in the loan participation program about the inclusion of a loan for financing improvements in energy efficiency. The purpose behind this change, Mr. Chairman, is that the legislature has done a lot of work in the individual home sector, the public sector, and the state school and those buildings, but has not really been able to crack the commercial or the multifamily residential sector. This allows ADA to participate with the private sector lending institutions to guarantee energy efficiency loans for those larger commercial developments. The Section 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, and 12, Mr. Chairman, are necessary and complex in that when ADA invests money or loans money, it's not a grant. They have to make an interest rate of return. This section amends each of the different variations of ADA's lending abilities through AS 4488-159 to require the same interest rate as earned. So this is not free money going out, but rather ADA has to recapture a return to the state. Section 13 is an addition to ADA's existing powers, that's page 8, line 9, existing powers to offer an interest rate incentive, recognizing that these are market-based rates. However, there are instances, particularly in rural development, job creation, or as the bill would suggest, adding renewable energy, that ADA should be able to offer an incentive interest rebate. So for a hydroelectric project or a project in a rural area, ADA could reduce the interest rate by 1%. That is basically the sectional analysis for the bill, Mr. Chairman. And what Senator McGuire can wrap up with, if the committee wishes, is to explain the policy call between why the decision was made for ADA.
Senator McGuire.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Some people have asked me why not have this in HFC or why not have this as a part of AEA and expand their authority. And so our reasons for picking ADA were, to begin with, ADA's obligations are not obligations of the state. And so you've got the statute there, Title 44, that lays it out that the bonds issued by the authority do not constitute an indebtedness or other liability of the state. And that's an important aspect when we're considering this amount of money going out. Also that ADA pays a dividend. And as we've been looking at energy policy and how to level and market the whole state, this is one way that we think this innovative program may end up benefiting the state. Since its inception, ADA has paid over $324,500,000 in dividends to the state of Alaska and has net assets of nearly $1 billion. As you guys remember, in 1981, ADA was capitalized with $384,500,000. So they have almost returned back the entire amount with which they were created, and it's a real Alaska success story. Just last year alone, you can see in 2011, $20 million was returned in dividend. And just to finish on that point, that when those dividends come back into the general fund, they're recirculated for allocations for the needs of those around the state.
And I thought you were going to say that ADA was selected because of their chairman.
Yes, and that too. Both the outgoing and the current. And it is another part of ADA that is such an amazing aspect, both their staff that's permanent as well as their board. Just a tremendous talent portfolio in Alaska. And I'm thrilled about Hugh coming on, having run Alaska Growth Capital and working with venture capital, working in the commercial lending arena. I think he is going to bring a lot more to it. And of course, his unique relationship with the chairman. So finally, they have a strong credit rating. The most recent ratings report for ADA in Standard & Poor's December 13 reaffirmed their AA minus rating. And it lists the reasons: due to a pledged portfolio of private economic development loans, a currently low loan delinquency rate, projected cash flows and debt service coverages that meet Standard & Poor's requirements for the AA category for state revolving loan programs, strong legal covenants, including an additional bond test requiring either an excess of 1.5 times the annual debt service or the maintenance of unrestricted surplus equal to $200 million or principal outstanding and never less than $100 million. And finally, the covenants that ADA has to maintain what we view as good liquidity in the authority's unrestricted cash equivalents balance. So we think this is exactly the right place to go. And I want to have Fish walk through briefly the process that ADA goes through right now in their project intake and vetting. One of the things that I've talked to both the co-chairmen about, I think, is exciting. There'll still be projects in Alaska that will come forward that will need an outright grant. We know this. But for those that are on the fence and could go through a commercial process, this is an opportunity to have them go through a creditworthiness analysis to really put skin in the game and, I think, make a better project. So, Fish, if you want to walk through that.
For the record, Michael Pulowski again. The ADA, under the current board leadership, has actually moved to more formalized process, and they are currently developing these and institutionalizing these. And as the Finance Committee, it's, of course, important to look at the actual due diligence that an agency does to evaluate a project. And we have Mark Davis here to testify in more detail to this later. But what you see before you is the current schematic that ADA is adopting and institutionalizing to give multiple no-go decisions and fiscal reviews and checks and balances to a project as it comes in the door as a potential development project and then proceeds to the construction funding or financing decision that ADA will make. In the bill, the power is given to ADA to set up fiscal controls for the fund that's being established. And it's important to put on the record that it is the intent of the sponsor that these type of strong fiscal controls be instituted to ensure that there's protection for the state assets and that there's multiple different groups that analyze these decisions before a decision to ever go forward in finance happens. And in final analysis, Mr. Chairman, just a quick review of how the proposed structure of this new fund would work. Starting with the arrow number one is the state of Alaska establishes the fund and capitalizes the fund with an appropriation. Step two is that ADA would use the proceeds within the fund to finance energy projects. Energy projects then, through the normal repayment process, would repay the fund. At the same time, ADA, as I said earlier, has the power to go out to the capital markets and borrow money against those proceeds to return money to the fund to loan to more projects. And finally, ADA pays a dividend back to the state of Alaska based on between 25% and 50% of its earnings. So the point is to take some of Alaska's money, put it to work within the state to earn a rate of return, provide financing to projects, and generate additional revenues to the Treasury. And, Mr. Chairman, I think it's important to just recognize that 25 is not the answer. It's a tool and it's a piece of the puzzle that this committee and this bipartisan working group has addressed for several years now to try and chip away at the energy problems in the state of Alaska.
Thank you. Before we take a brief at ease, do members have questions of Senator McGuire? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just curious, and thank you for the explanations. Very well done. I'm just curious, as you looked at it, some particular projects, and I agree with the assessment of particularly the hydroelectric projects, they have extremely long-term projects, extremely expensive upfront costs, and they are, however, have extreme dramatic impacts on the economy of the state or the nation, or the nation in some cases, or the region. And, of course, the state of Alaska was a little behind the curve, wasn't even a state by the time that most of the federal money had been used on on hydroelectric projects and electrical transmission and road systems and things like that. So we missed that. And I was just curious, as you looked at the loan potential and minimum interest rates due to the thinking of the kind of a marginal impact or effect that you actually, when you look at a big hydroelectric project and its long-term assessment, it's very hard to factor in the resource development and the other things that take that will take place versus a commercial loan for something that come, somebody can say, we're building this, and here's the customer base, they're right there, and this is what we're going to do. So I was wondering, as you looked at that and you came up with a minimum interest rate, was there any consideration given of what the state actually receives in some lesser interest rates potentially than what would be received, as I think is referred to here, the annual interest rate achieved from their internal and external investment managers of ADA funds? Is that what we're referring to there? Did you look at potentially some of the lower interest rates that we receive on long-term bonds or things like that?
Senator Thomas, through the chair, we did. The decision was made to moderate the interest incentive to the existing economic development, so that might allow for a slight up to 1% interest rate reduction. In terms of the actual statewide benefits, the theory was because these projects will, by and large, likely have to come back through the legislature for authorization. Once a financing plan is in place and that's brought to the legislature to approve investment in a project, those ancillary benefits can be thought through at the legislative level. But the idea was to not give ADA the power to really delve into those type of questions, because that would be that'd be more of a legislative decision. We wanted to keep ADA to a commercial lending decision based to protect their credit rating and protect the return to the Treasury. So as the Senator said in the opening, there will always be a need for additional capitalization following on with these projects, in addition to just the financing that 25 will provide.
But and thank you,
Senator McGuire.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I do want to emphasize, though, that the purpose behind the creation of ADA, as you know, was precisely that there would be state infrastructure that we would want contemplate building as we grew our state, and that having this bank would benefit us in the future. So that's certainly the overarching, value system behind ADA, and that is particularly why we think this fund should be placed there. We give a few other provisions. We allow for ADA to defer principal payments. We didn't specify for how long. I'm certainly open, I would say this, to changes that wouldn't go too far. I think, what Mike said is really important. We don't want to hand off, a bill of goods to ADA that ends up putting aside the success of their model that they have so far. So I think it's important that they generate a return that comes back in the form of a dividend. But we do recognize, particularly in the area of renewable energy, the hydro projects and so forth, that there is such a benefit to the state. And we hope that because it's Alaskans running ADA, serving on the board, and in part members of the private sector and the public, that will be a part of every analysis that comes in, is that they're looking at these projects certainly for the benefit to the state. And that was the point of this bill, is to get some of these projects up and going. As you said, we unfortunately missed the boat on a lot of those big federal loans for Susitna and other things.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. Follow up, Senator Thomas.
Just quickly, and I do appreciate also the memorandum, which I expect that you probably requested regarding some of the other projects that were more politically motivated than economically motivated. So that's a good reminder to people of reasoning why we have sound practices in place. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. Further questions of committee members? Seeing none, we'll take a brief at ease. We have several people in the room and a few online. The first to testify today on Senate Bill 25 is Bob Loescher, former Sea Alaska CEO. Mr. Loescher.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Bob Loescher. I have a company called Alaska Technology Development Group, and I've been very active in energy and economic development projects for rural communities and Alaska Native entities. I also, Mr. Chairman, I served and I was appointed by Governor Knowles for two terms on the ADA board as a public member. So I had really valuable experience working with ADA board members and the management of ADA. And I would acknowledge and recommend to you that ADA is the right spot for this fund to be placed, and I urge you to do so. ADA is very vital to the economic development and to the infrastructure support of Alaska communities and regions as a whole. And they're involved in port development. They've been involved in commercial development of tourism facilities and malls and airport facilities at Anchorage and other places. And their contribution to the state and has been very valuable in being able not only to utilize Alaska financial resources, but bringing in capital from institutional financing and from investors across America who invest in bonds and loans and whatnot. The thing that impresses me most, Mr. Chairman, about my experience on ADA is that ADA has protocols and requirements in law where they balance the investments from across the state on the various kinds of enterprises that need to be supported financially. And I think that's very important because not only do we have needs in rural Alaska and in urban areas and in the Southeast Alaska, all of those need to be balanced as Alaska commits in their policies, their financial policies, investment in our regions and our communities. In conclusion, Mr. Chairman, I urge you to support this bill. I think it's the right place. ADA has it. They cooperate with the banks of Alaska and require participation there. They do the due diligence on investments, and I think they will do us well in promoting the intent of this fund. So thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Loescher. Any questions? Seeing none, this next testifier is Mark Davis, Deputy Director of ADA. Mr. Davis.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, and for the record, my name is Mark Davis. I'm one of the Deputy Directors of ADA, testifying today in SB 25. I wanted to just give you an overview of what this bill would do. It would essentially create an energy infrastructure bank. It would be a new program within ADA that is separate from the current Enterprise Development Fund that ADA now uses to fund its loan participations and its project development. So it would be a separate fund of money over to the side for a dedicated purpose, and it would have the powers that you've heard discussed. I think it's important to note that those powers fit into the current financial markets. Right now, government securities such as treasury bills are at relatively low levels. When I checked this morning, they're at approximately 2% on 30-year T-bills. interest rates are relatively low and commodity prices are relatively high. That means that there is capital seeking to invest in the United States in infrastructure that can earn a rate of return. The type of return, in response to Senator Thomas's question, that this bill puts forward is consistent with the market-based rates that we currently use in loan participations, and therefore it should be able to attract that capital working with this new fund. So this really would create an opportunity for leveraging this money with private capital to build these energy projects. These type of projects tend to be expensive, and therefore you need sometimes large amounts of capital. So this bill would do that. Some of the powers that are important are as Senator McGuire mentioned, the capitalization of interest to allow for patient capital, which is consistent with ADA's development of the Long Mountain Transportation System, in which ADA floated the bonds and it was paid back over a long period of time. And at first, of course, had to pay those bonds out of its own resources because the project didn't develop enough cash at first to pay those bonds back. That's consistent with the type of financing you do for infrastructure. Another powers it provides is direct loans. Right now, ADA does not make direct loans. It only operates the secondary market. So this would be a change for the energy site segment. And secondly, it allows for bond and loan guarantees. A bond guarantee, for example, can be useful if a utility issues a bond, gets a rating based on its debt service, its ability to repay, and its overall financial condition. If it receives an additional guarantee from this type of proposal in SB 25, then it can lower that rate, which can save the ratepayers a considerable amount of money with relatively little risk to the agency issuing the guarantee. So what you essentially get is lower energy prices without expending any government dollars. And ADA therefore thinks that's a useful idea, particularly when we're facing some of the energy costs we see in rural Alaska. So those would be my overall comments. We still have some technical work to do on the bill. We're working with the bill sponsor, and I won't go into those now, but we have law on the telephone. If anybody has any technical questions, that would be the end of my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Davis. Seeing no questions, the third testifier, Peter Nararo, the chairman of Power Products.
Mr. Chairman, I believe you called me, but I'm with Kootsnuwu. My name is Peter Nowros, members of the committee. I am general manager of Kootsnuwu, Inc., the ANCSA Corporation for Angoon, Alaska. We're here today to testify in support of SB 25 and the measures the sponsor has brought forth. We think this is a very good bill, much needed, and it's going to be the tool that allows the public and the private to come together in Alaska. Kootsnuwu has been very involved in the Southeast Integrated Resource Plan, and one of the things that was mentioned throughout the drafting process is how expensive these projects are and how the state of Alaska doesn't have enough money. Our congressman in D.C. made a comment about that one, saying that is it expensive? Yes. Is it too expensive? No. I think Alaska is a great investment. The ability to invest in Alaska would attract a lot of private capital, and we think that this is the type of package to do that. And let me give you an example. Kootsnuwu owns 23,000 acres of land immediately adjacent to Bokan Mountain, which is coming along quite well. And Bokan is adjacent to Niblack, and there's some indication that the subsurface that Sea Alaska owns underneath us has a very high level of mineralization. We're looking for ways to get power transmission lines from the existing grid over to that part of Prince of Wales, and there is no economics down there that supports that at this point in time. However, as the projects get further, closer and closer to reality, you know, money's going to be interested in participating and providing that energy to those projects. SB 25 provides a mechanism to attract the capital, not only from inside the state of Alaska, but outside. And that, I would argue, is about the best thing we can do to deal with the fact that these infrastructure costs are so high, is to bring others in to help share that cost. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm ready to answer any questions the committee may have.
Thank you for that testimony. Seeing no questions, we'll move on to Duff Mitchell, Juno Hydro.
Mr. Chair and Senate Finance Committee, I'm Duff Mitchell. I'm from Juneau, Alaska. I'm the Vice President and Business Manager for Juneau Hydropower, Inc., but I'm here to testify today on behalf of the Alaska Independent Power Producers Association, a statewide organization. It has members across the state, including SERI, Delta Wind Farm, Juneau Hydropower. Kutznu is also our members, and also Bob Grimm with Alaska Power and Telephone. We feel that this is a very good bill. I think it offers one facet of a portfolio of opportunities that this body has moved forward on to move our state forward and become energy independent and lower and or stabilize rates throughout the state. You can't do everything by the government, and this enables the private sector to put their risk capital up, get the project to the point where it's developed. A lot of effort goes into getting these projects up to the point where they are feasible, and then the loans can come in. A unique aspect of this is that by leveraging and syndicating a loan, it allows ADA to bring in state money, which also reduces risk for large international and national firms to come in and help invest. So we feel Senate Bill 25 is good, responsible legislation that takes our policies and then puts them into executable steps. I want to point out that infrastructure investment in energy pays dividends in two ways. You heard that it pays back the loan, and that's good because, you know, then it's not free money. It's using our state money and leveraging it and also getting a dividend back for that capital. But also pays a dividend in that economically feasible projects that would come out of this program also pay the dividend in lower rates and or stabilized rates for long hauls. You heard that hydropower projects can have a 50-year life. When you have a feasible project that's uniquely feasible today, it becomes super feasible 50 years from now with the rates and the dividends that it pays back to our citizens. And so in closing, I would just like to say that Alaska Independent Power Producers really supports this bill. We put it up on our website, and we think this is good legislation. If I was going to have the question of what improvement I would suggest to this bill, I would suggest of upping the dollar amount. My particular project that I'm working in is in excess of $100 million. Now, we're not going to ask for a loan from ADA for the entire amount. We would syndicate that. But what I'm saying is that these projects of magnitude are could evaporate the total fund quite quickly with some of the larger projects.
Thank you, Mr. Mitchell.
Thank you.
Seeing no questions, we'll move on to the LIO in Glen Allen, Robert Wilkinson with Copper Valley Electric.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. My name is Robert Wilkinson. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Copper Valley Electric, the co-op that serves 260 miles of the Glen and Richardson highways, including the communities of Valdez, Glen Allen, and Copper Center. I believe your packet contains a letter from me supporting SB 25, along with a brochure that tells you a little bit more about our co-op in the region that we serve, and also about our recent power supply initiative, that being the Allison Creek Hydro Project. Allison Creek is about a $40 million project, and we have been a beneficiary of approximately $14 million in committed funding through the Renewable Energy Fund and also capital budget appropriations. It's likely we will borrow most, if not all, of the remaining funds to construct this project. That money could be borrowed from the state of Alaska under the program put forth under Senate Bill 25. We believe that this bill represents an opportunity for the state, as has been stated by many persons before me today, to invest in worthy infrastructure projects, one of which is Allison Creek, which will help achieve not only lower power costs for Copper Valley's members, but will also earn a return for the state treasury instead of sending our debt service payments to outside bankers. In 2008, the legislature created the Renewable Energy Fund, which by all accounts has been wildly successful. In 2010, the legislature established energy policy and passed the Sustainable Energy Act. We believe that Senate Bill 25 is a next logical step in fulfilling the vision that's been unfolding over the past several years, and we urge the committee to move the bill. Thank you.
Thank you for that testimony. Is there anyone else in the room that wants to testify on this bill? Seeing none, Senator McGuire, do you have any final comments as sponsor?
Oh, just thank you to the folks that testified here, and I just draw members' attention to the letters in the packet. They come from a diverse cross-section of Alaskans that have stated their interest in accessing loans from a fund like this. And I concur. I think it's the next logical step from the efforts we've made here in the Senate, and would be delighted to move it forward and get it working.
Thank you, Senator McGuire. With that, we'll take a brief at ease.
We're now going to House Bill 250 by Senator Thomas regarding extending the Renewable Energy Grant Fund. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside. With us today is not Senator Thomas, excuse me, Representative Thomas, but his trustee aide. And if she could introduce herself for the record and take us through this bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Casey Schroeder-Hotch, staff to Representative Thomas. House Bill 250 reauthorizes the Renewable Energy Grant Fund for another 5 years. Established in 2008, the Renewable Energy Grant Fund has funded around 200 projects across the state, focusing on areas of the state with the highest energy costs. More and more projects come online each year, with 21 projects being online by the end of 2011. By 2013, it is estimated that the fund will be responsible for displacing 6 million gallons of diesel fuel each year. The fund also includes a continuation of the intent language, which was expressed in the enabling legislation, to fund the program at $50 million a year. And with that, I can try to answer any questions. I would also like to note that we have Peter Krimp from AEA in the room, and he can answer program-specific questions.
If there's anybody in the room that wishes to testify, make sure you sign up, because I don't have anybody here but somebody from AARP. So go ahead and continue.
I'm done. If the committee has any questions, I can attempt to answer them.
Do we have any questions? Where's Representative? Come in here?
I don't see him.
No. Do we have any questions for bill sponsor? Okay. We're going to go ahead and start the public hearing portion, but we have one fiscal note from the Department of Commerce, Community Economic Development, an amount of $2,155,000, which is already included in the governor's FY13 operating budget. We have one person signed up to testify, Pat Luby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Pat Luby. I'm the Advocacy Director for AARP in Alaska. AARP is obviously not an energy company, but all of our members are consumers and customers. And as you well know from your older constituents, as well as your younger constituents, in many cases people are having trouble paying their energy bills. AARP is also the largest organization of grandparents in the world. These are all future energy customers. Our state has a history of developing successful renewable energy projects through this fund. Renewing the fund will give Alaska and our citizens more opportunities to experiment with renewable energy projects. Those organizations and those creative individuals who think, I wonder if we could save energy if we tried this, will have a chance to secure the funding to try that idea and make it work. AARP encourages you to extend the Renewable Energy Fund for us as well as for our grandkids. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. We have nobody else signed up to testify. Nobody's called in. We'll come back to the committee. May the bill sponsor come forward. Do you have any final questions for the bill sponsor? Any final comments before we set this bill aside? Senator Tom or Senator Hoffman?
We don't have a member that testified, but I have a member that was on the board. I wonder if Chris Rose would say a few words on his participation in the program and how he perceives it.
Sure. If you like a program, you might want to come forward and speak up, or you may never see it again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Chris Rose, the Executive Director of the Renewable Energy Alaska Project, REAP. We're a coalition of about 85 organizations across the state, including utilities, businesses, conservation consumer groups, Alaska Native organizations, and local, state, and federal entities. We have been involved with this since the very beginning. We fully support the reauthorization and the extension till 2018, at least, of this bill, of this program. We have seen a lot of projects in the pipeline. I think it's worth noting that of the 208 projects that have already been funded, about half of those have been feasibility and reconnaissance projects, meaning that there are a lot of projects that have not yet got to construction. We foresee that in the next 5 years, we will see a lot more construction projects. As Representative Thomas's office has pointed out, we're looking at least $6 million or 6 million gallons of diesel being displaced by the end of next year, and that number is just going to keep expanding. And as the price of diesel goes up, the savings to the state is going to keep expanding. So we really support the extension of the program, and I'm here to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other final comments from the bill sponsor?
No, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. We'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. A little late. We're going to move on to the next bill, 182. Bringing up Senate Bill 182 by the Senate Education Committee regarding the pupil transportation program. This is the first hearing on this bill. The intent today is to have the sponsor introduce the bill, take public testimony, and set the bill aside. With us today is the bill sponsor. If he can introduce himself for the record, who he represents, and tell us what the bill does, please.
Okay. Very good. Thank you, Co-Chair Stedman and Co-Chair Hoffman and members of the Finance Committee. For the record, I am Senator Meyer from Southeast Anchorage. As you know, a top priority of the Senate this year, as other years, has been education. And some of the very complex issues in delivering a good education for our students here in Alaska, we've done a good job of addressing. Both co-chair of education, Senator Thomas, and I have been looking for ways to improve our system, and in looking at education, we first took care of the funding, as you know, Mr. Chairman, through increasing the BSA with Senate Bill 171. Second, now also a big dollar amount is the pupil transportation. It's about $62 million a year, which takes up a big chunk of our education funding. And up till year 2003, Mr. Chairman, the state provided funding for pupil transportation based on actual costs that were reported to the department, and that was based on annual financial audits. And then after 2003, we made a change. We started reimbursing based on a per pupil basis, and we've been continuing with that. But unfortunately, that particular method we've found has been underfunding pupil transportation costs, resulting in districts having to take money out of the classroom to fund their pupil transportation. Also, what we're finding is that each district does it a little bit different. Some may have really nice school buses, some may have older, some may have cameras, some may have GPS. So there's no consistency either in our busing. So that's why we have Senate Bill 182 before you today, and it does several things. First, it recalibrates the existing per pupil amount school districts receive under the current grant program to fiscal year 12 and fiscal year 13 up to more realistic levels, kind of gets everybody up to where they should be. Second, it changes the per pupil program to an actual cost or reimbursable program, kind of like we were again before 2003, which again based on annual financial audits as reported to the Department of Education. So there is some controls put in place so that we know what the actual costs were. Third, it puts into place the oversight by the department to control the costs. The goal is for the department to line up all the different school districts so that we can do the RFP process and get competitive bids on our busing system. As of right now, each school district does their own. They don't get many bids because, frankly, there's not enough students to spread out the capital costs of buying new buses. So some school districts, unfortunately, have a monopoly. And as you know, that does not usually lead to the best rates. So we're trying to get everybody on the same schedule and then pay on the actual costs instead of per pupil costs. And then also by having DED overseeing this program, have consistent standards throughout all the different school districts. So, Mr. Chairman, that's the orientation. We'll be happy to walk through the bill with you if you so desire.
Do we have any initial questions for the bill sponsor? Seeing none, we have one fiscal note from the Department of Education and Early Development with the following estimates. An FY12 supplemental in the amount of $8,103,300, and FY13 appropriation for $10,450,300, which is in addition to the $62,202,700 currently in the governor's FY13 operating budget, then one additional full-time position. And with that, I'd like to go ahead and open up the public hearing portion. We have a couple people in the off-net. I'll go ahead and work my way through it. There's five. If you can try to keep your comments to 2 minutes and be succinct and speak to the bill, please, and then start by introducing yourself and who you represent. And I'd like to go ahead and start with Dave Jones in Kenai.
Yes, Senator. Co-Chair Stedman and Co-Chair Hoffman, members of the committee, my name is Dave Jones. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District. I want to start by thanking you for addressing the transportation issues that schools are facing. Transportation costs have risen substantially, and if those costs, as Senator Meyer stated, if those costs are not met or funded within the transportation funding, districts are forced to pull dollars from the general fund classroom to address them. Our district personally has attempted to do many things to draw additional vendors to bid. We extended our contract by a year and hoping that we could pull more in. We haven't been able to. And so without your help, we're going to have a substantial deficit in the transportation fund. So I would just close by urging you to pass Senate Bill 182. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jones, for your testimony. Mike Fisher in Fairbanks, please.
Good afternoon. I'm Mike Fisher, Chief Financial Officer for the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District. Thank you, Chairman Hoffman and Stedman, and members of the committee for this opportunity to speak. For the record, the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District supports SB 182, and we, too, thank you for all the work you put on this bill and for addressing this important issue. We bus over 7,000 students today, cover over 1 million miles annually, and this bill will help us keep other critical operating dollars in the classroom. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony today. Next up, Steve Klamas from Anchorage.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Stephen Klamas. I'm Director of Transportation for the Anchorage School District. We also support Senate Bill 180. The reasons for the bill were outlined very well by Senator Meyer, and my associates in Kenai and Fairbanks have addressed some of the cost issues. We have seen significant increased costs in pupil transportation, well beyond the COLA that has been provided in some years since we've gone to the grant system. As you know, fuel costs have skyrocketed in the last several years. Our initial contract in 2006, we had a fuel cap of $2.50 a gallon, and we're over $4 a gallon right now. We've seen significant increases because of the increase in fuel and the cost of school buses. We've seen, because of the cost of raw materials, 3 to 5% annual increases. And we also saw a 7 to 10% increase in the cost of buses to meet the 2010 federal mandate on diesel emissions. We're also seeing increased requirements by the federal government. Next year, we will be spending close to $500,000 to transport homeless students here in Anchorage. So with the increased costs in transportation and the the lack of funding, we are eating into the classroom. Our shortfall next year is anticipated to be about $2.2 million. So we do appreciate you considering this legislation, and again, we do support it.
Okay. Thank you. Next up, we'll go to Palmer, Dr. Dina Paramore.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, this is Ken Forrest. I'm the chief business official for the Mat-Su Borough School District. And we also support Senate Bill 182. We also, as per the previous comments, are seeing market increase in our expenses related to transportation. We did do a competitive bid last year. We had two vendors who bid. We took the low bid and saved about $11 million over the life of the contract, but our costs have still risen substantially. We will be eating into our general operating fund for about $3.4 million next year without the support that Senate Bill 182 would provide to us. So we are in support of the bill and appreciate the committee's efforts on moving it forward.
And then that probably takes care of the testimony for Dr. Paramo also?
Yes, sir, it does.
Okay, thank you. That concludes the off-net. The sign-up will come into the room. We've got one person in the sign-up sheet, Bruce Johnson. If you don't talk us out of this, we might be able to move along here.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you. I'm Bruce Johnson, the Executive Director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators that represents superintendents, principals, and business officials. We appreciate your hearing this bill, and obviously you've heard that it's critically important to our school district. ACSA supports this bill, and I'd like to thank and recognize the school business officials that put a lot of work into trying to determine accurate amounts for these per-student amounts that are represented in the committee substitute. In summary, by embracing this bill, you will assure that more classroom dollars destined for the classroom will actually get there and will not be diverted to transportation. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That concludes the public testimony portion. We'll come back to the bill sponsor. Senator Meyer, can you give us some closing comments on this bill, please? If there's any other, there's no questions from the committee members first. Hey, Senator Meyer, closing comments?
Mr. Chairman, no more comments. It's, you know, I think in 2003 when we switched from actual cost basis to a per pupil basis, we thought we'd be saving money by doing that. We tried it for almost 10 years, and it hasn't saved money. In fact, it's increased money, and it's, in my opinion, created a lot of inconsistencies between school districts as far as busing standards go.
Okay. Okay, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside for further review. Next meeting, 9 a.m. tomorrow, we're going to have three bills up. House Bill 284, the FY13 operating budget. House Bill 285, the FY13 mental health budget. And then Senate Bill 192 again, oil and gas production tax, and that'll be just a brief update on the slides that we have asked the PFC Energy to kind of update. So it might be 20 minutes or something, won't be very long. A lot of it will be repeat. I just want to get those updated data to the committee members so they have them for the weekend. We are adjourned.